Sure. I mean, the point is that the brother was asked about commanding good or forbidding evil in a non-Muslim state. I mean, don't misunderstand me. I just said the regulations are different. I wasn't trying to imply that there's no commanding good, there's no forbidding evil when you live under a non-Muslim rule. But just the regulations are different. And one of the proofs of regulations is different is that the Prophet ﷺ forbade the establishment of the hudud on the battlefield. And the reason why is because, you know, if you were to apply the hudud on the battlefield, well, what might happen is that a person, okay, you know, a person will say, and this happened in the time of the Sahaba, a person would drink, you know, wine on the battlefield. You whip him for drinking, you know, alcohol. He gets angry, and then he goes over to the enemy, okay? He goes over to the enemy and he says, well, you know, the Muslims, their armies are weak here, they're weak there, and so forth, you know. It results in a greater evil. Now, at the same time, when a Muslim lives in a non-Muslim land, you know, if you were to apply the hudud upon them, I mean, it could result in greater evil in the sense that, you know, you've established an authority within the state, and so the state then therefore might clamp down on the Muslims, but also it might lead to apostasy. Because if a person, you know, knew that the hudud was to be applied upon him, he might then just say, well, I don't want to be a Muslim, and I don't want any of this thing, and he might just flee. And so you were at first trying to stop him from an evil, to purify him from his sin, and now you've sent him into unbelief, you know what I'm saying? Irrespective, the state intervenes and puts an end to that or not. So, you know, with the example the brother gave, for instance, let's say you lived in a Muslim community, there was a store that didn't close down for Jum'ah. You tried over a long period of time to encourage this shop owner, you know, not to open his store during Jum'ah. Or alternatively, let's say he was selling some un-Islamic products. And so then, you know, the people in the Muslim community said, well, what we're going to do is we want people to boycott this store. We don't want you to put your money there because, you know, this brother has, you know, not observed Allah's commandments. This is fine. I mean, because, you know, I mean, people can boycott, you know, and nobody's going to say to you that you've broken any law in the country or, you know, but, I mean, obviously this is only going to work if you have such a strong community that are going to rally behind you and boycott this store, right? If the community is weak, all right, and the community could care less, and you start calling for the boycott of a store, then the community will just start, you know, thinking of you as some sort of, you know, fanatical group and so forth. And so any benefit that could come by you being with that community in terms of educating them and teaching them and rectifying them will be lost. But, I mean, if we're to imagine that you have such a strong community, then, I mean, there shouldn't be any problem with that. At least I don't see any. Yes? Please do.
So maybe the way out is probably when you buy things in that Muslim shop. Maybe it's a power to the brothers.
Right. I mean, obviously, I mean, you know, when the brother's saying that people would go to a non-Muslim store, you know, it's not, you know, obviously, which is worse. I mean, you know, obviously the, I mean, that's why one has to have the foresight. I mean, if the situation was such that the alternative is going to a non-Muslim store, then it might be argued, you know, that it's better here to give your money to a fasiq Muslim than to give your money to a kafir, okay? But, I mean, let's say there was two Muslim stores. One was a person of piety, and one was a person of impiety. You know, then, and the community was such that it was strong and it was vibrant and it was, you know, aware and obedient. And then you said to the brother, say, look, you know, we're really not trying to say one you should buy from one product or the other store, but, you know, we want to encourage, and so therefore we'd like people not to buy from the store until we stop selling these forbidden items. And so the people do that. After 2 weeks, the brother sees that his business is going down, so he, you know, takes that stuff out of his store. Alhamdulillah, you've achieved your end. But you need that foresight. That actually by doing that you're going to get that result, right? But you know, if you find that by doing that it's going to result in the masjid breaking into two sections and, you know, a lot of infighting and so forth, and it doesn't, you know, shouldn't be done. There, yes. The ayah is specific for Muslims, right? But it can be, I mean, the brothers asked about the ayah from Surah Al-Ma'idah, that one should, assist one another in birr, righteousness, and taqwa, piety, and not assist one another in sinfulness and in transgression. The ayah was, you know, is revealed in the context of the Muslims, okay, and it's primarily applicable to Muslims, but it is applicable to the non-Muslims. I mean, if the non-Muslims are doing something to which there's some sort of common good, the Muslims can participate in that, provided the Muslims keep their identity and don't lose their identity, right? So, for instance, if there is some sort of issue that, let's say, feeding the homeless or something like that, right? And the Muslims work with the non-Muslims to feed the homeless. I mean, this is nothing wrong in the Sharia concerning this. And it might even bring some benefit, right? Because by, you know, assisting them, you might be also giving an opportunity to give da'wah that had you not, you know, assisted them, you would not be able to enter into that field to give people da'wah and so forth. Or perhaps, you know, you wanted to bring some skill to the Muslim community, like working in refugees camps and so forth, right? Let's say Muslims, you know, they wanted to take care of refugees, but they don't have the skills in terms of, you know, Muslims don't know how to put up tents, they don't know how to do primary medical care, and they don't know how to distribute food, they don't know how to do crowd control, I mean, all the things you would have to do if there was some sort of crisis, right? So a Muslim relief organization works with a non-Muslim relief organization, and they go to some place like Guatemala, like a non-Muslim country, right, to do the relief work. The Muslims at the same time are given an opportunity to spread da'wah. Plus they learn the skills of how to, do a relief situation, some sort of relief crisis, and they can bring back those skills and teach it to other Muslims so that when there's something happens in the Muslim land, they can go and effectively do that. Then that's permissible in the Sharia, inshallah, inshallah. It depends, because, you know, it depends on what's the result of it. I mean, if people are going to buy from him, right, and they're sending him a signal that we don't care what you sell, then obviously you're assisting him upon sinfulness, right? But if people are buying from him in order to encourage him to do good, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you go there and you buy from him and you say, oh, you know, brother, mashallah, you have, you know, what a lovely store, you know what I'm saying? You know, but, you know, inshallah, ta'ala, if you could just, you know, stop selling these cigarettes, you know. I mean, then therefore, you know, you're encouraging him and say, you know, we'd like to put in, we're going to have some sort of event in the Islamic center, and we'd like you to, you know, cater for it, like you go to a restaurant, we'd like you to cater for it, but, you know, we can't invite you because you sell khamar, and so it wouldn't be a good signal to the Islamic center for that. But, you know, if you would only stop, then we could make sure that whenever we have an aqiqah or a walima in the Islamic center, we'll call your restaurant to cater for us the meal and something like that. And that might be enough of a prod at first for him, because he sees that he's going to make some sort of, you know, some sort of profit for him to stop doing that. And inshallah ta'ala, I mean, iman will build in his heart. Okay, this is the last question. We still have more talk about commanding good forbidding. We'll do the next session. If you see evil in your house, is it right to command the good, knowing that it will cause fitna? As a member of your family is reading a lot of magazines and you rip them up, or they are watching unnecessary TV, turning it off, or smashing the TV. The question said it's going to cause fitna. If the person, really believes it's going to cause fitna, then obviously you cannot command good or forbid evil this way. But let's say you're the father of the household, right? And, you know, you're the father of the household, and you have a responsibility, and you, as the father of the household, make sure that what enters into the household, what your kids are reading, you know what I'm saying, is magazines which are Islamically, you know, proper. So if your teenage daughter brings in a magazine, your teenage son brings in a magazine which you do not want him to read, right? And you say, look, you know, while you're in this household, you know, we're not going to be reading, you know, these types of magazines and so forth. And, I mean, this is within your right. It's not going to cause a fitna. But if you are the son of the household, right, and your parents are reading a magazine, you know what I'm saying, and then you start ripping it up, or one of your siblings are reading a magazine, or you push over the television and so forth, I mean, this is, you know, obviously, as the brother said in the question, it's going to cause fitna. So obviously you cannot, you know, command good and forbid evil in this way. Okay, so inshallah, we'll take a break and then come back.